You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 40 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the 4-0 victory over Stoke as the Reds fall just short of the Premier League title race. Discussing potential ins and outs with the transfer merry-go-round set to begin. And could we really have seen the last of Dimitar Berbatov in a Manchester United shirt?
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 40 of the RedCafe.net podcast. Dan and Dov, how are you this week? All things considered with the Chelsea game and winning at Stoke, but inevitably losing the title.
Yeah, a bit flat really, Steve. Obviously, high hopes going into this weekend, hoping that, you know, a miracle would happen at Stamford Bridge. Didn't quite happen, did it? especially when Anelka scored the opening goal. You know, you thought Wigan might get a set piece, but then when they got reduced to 10 men, it was just, there's no point even... Might as well have walked off the pitch then, really. But no, confident performance from United. I thought they played really well, knowing that, you know, obviously we weren't going to win the league. So yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to next season already, and obviously, you know, the World Cup coming up as well.
Good stuff. Dov, how are you doing this week?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I was a bit disappointed, but my pub landlord is a bit, he's pleased because he managed to skin me for a lot of money last night as I drowned my sorrows following the game. So at least one person is smiling.
Oh dear. Well, we'll kick off the show, guys, by reviewing the last day victory over Stoke. Dan, given what was going on at Stamford Bridge, I mean, every time we seem to score, they seem to score twice, Chelsea. But we knew pretty early on, didn't we, that it wasn't going to be. But still, it was good to see the lads put on a good performance and score some decent goals.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the fact that they did, I mean, that our game could have easily turned out to be a boring 0-0 draw, you know, after they knew what was happening at Stamford Bridge and things like that. So, like I said before, you know, I mean, it's good that the lads did put in a performance for the fans. They responded in kind, but I mean, it wasn't electric, was it, at Old Trafford? I think everyone was a bit despondent, apart from the Stoke fans that seemed to be cheering every Chelsea goal, which I don't really know what that was all about. I mean, we don't really have a rivalry with Stoke. If it was Liverpool or something like that, I'd fully understand it, you know, but for someone like Stoke City to rub our noses in it is a bit... It's a bit bent, really, isn't it? Well, there you go.
Would you not have expected it from any away support, then?
If we'd gone not really, no. And... I wouldn't mind, but if it was, you know... Like I say, if it was Liverpool or in a reverse way, then I'd fully accept that. But, I mean, Stoke, we have absolutely no rivalry with Stoke whatsoever for them to be... And the fact that they weren't even supporting their own team, really. You know, they were getting thumped 4-0 and they're cheering. It's like, no, I'm not sure about that.
Do you not think it was maybe just the everything United symbol?
It's always like that. It's always like that, you know. But I don't know. I just think I thought it was a bit pathetic, really, to be honest with you. Like, we won't say any more about it, so I'll get a bit irate.
And Dov, Dan's talked about it there, but obviously Chelsea beating Wigan 8-0. I mean, were you expecting them to put up a bit more of a fight? I mean, I know they didn't have anything to play for, but if you go out there potentially knowing you could spoil the party for Chelsea and really be a hero at Old Trafford, wouldn't you, if you put in a decent performance? But it wasn't to be, and once the penalty had been awarded and the red card shown as well, that was pretty much all hope gone, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first goal for me, I think I sent you a text message after the first goal just saying game over, when I thought that was it. I didn't think Wigan were going to get back into it, although to be fair to them, for the first 20 minutes they had a lot more possession than Chelsea. They just couldn't get that final ball, which it gave me a little bit of hope, even when we were, or when they were 1-0 down, and obviously we weren't winning at the time either, so I still had a bit of hope. But after Gary Caldwell stupidly got sent off, which I think we're going to have 3 red cards this season, he's going to peel them to himself, it was game over from then. And then Chelsea pretty much took control, and it was a strolling apart for them. But to score 8 goals as well, I mean, you've got to give credit to them. I think they're worthy champions, and I would say they deserve the title over us.
Dan, Berbatov, the soap opera, it continues to roll over, doesn't it? But I thought he actually did pretty well, to be fair. All right, he missed one probably you'd have to call it a sitter, wouldn't you? That header that was plumb middle of goal, and he managed to head it over the top. But there was another header which was a great effort from him. I think it clipped the bar, didn't it, on its way over. And just his general link-up play, and again, more little touches. And the ball, I remember a ball through for, I think it was through for Rooney, and Rooney could have probably done better with it. But again, that was more of what he's about. And of course, the assist for Giggs when he, we started to see that he can run at people, and he, if he gets a defender turned, he really can worry teams. So in that sense, I thought he did pretty well. But the Willy won't he stories continue, don't they? That some people even suggesting that could be his last game for United. But surely Ferguson, after spending what, 30-odd million pounds on him, he's not going to want to lose out on such a big investment.
No, I don't think he'll leave. I think he offers too much to the team in terms of, like you say, build-up play, hold-up play. We've been through it time and time again. I mean, it takes great skill to head a ball over from that range, you know, from CD to score. I mean, to be honest with you, that's great skill. Like you say, the second header which hit the bar was a thumping header, really. He could have probably kept it a little bit, you know, down a little bit more, but, I mean, I thought he did. That was a reasonable effort. And obviously he set up Giggs' goal as well by, like you say, was it Andy Wilkinson, and he got into the box. And he played a decent ball across, which Giggs finished. So, I think that the people that want to get him out, you know, should just, what we're going to gain from selling him, if you know what I mean. We probably won't get, you know, 20 million for him, 15 million for him anyway, you know, with his age and everything else. So, I think he's a great asset to have in the squad. Maybe he might not start every game, but I think he's definitely someone who provides different options.
Dov, Michael Carrick. He's not started a Premier League game, you might be a bit surprised to hear, since March. I mean, he's had a few sub-appearances since then, but in the Premier League, he's not started since then. And I'd say Ferguson, he seems to be making a bit of an example out of him, doesn't he? Well, not including him anyway. Is that a sign that potentially he could be on his way out?
I think if he doesn't have, well, doesn't really get his act together, same pre-season stuff, I don't think he'll be out, to be honest, because I don't think centre midfield is a place that we can afford to be starting to sell players, because I think we're quite light in that area as it is. The thing about him is, for me, he spent like a Carrick as a player. It dwells on the ball a lot, and he needs too much time on the ball to make a pass. Although he can pick out a pass, and he's good to have as a sort of a creative midfielder, sort of taking the ball off the defenders. But I just think there are better players in his position, and when Hargreaves maybe comes back as well, and obviously you've got Fletcher has pretty much cemented his place as a first choice player. Anderson is going to come back. Scholes is going to have another year at least. I mean, you're going to think, how many games is he going to play? Because when Gibson came on against Stoke at the weekend as well, you're thinking, well, if Dan Gibson's now ahead of him in the pecking order, he's not going to be playing very much, and that probably means he won't be very happy at being a new substitute for a lot of games. And then eventually he might just say he wants to leave anyway, and it might not be Fergie's decision in the end. But I think it's strange, because obviously, like, I think this is the first year he's not won the league since he joined. I just think it's a bit strange what's going on. I don't know. I'll be interested to see what happens this summer. I think I alluded to it before we came on, that he said if we get a big bid for him, like 50 million or something like that, then you'd take it. Yeah, and I'd be inclined to agree with that.
And Dan, Edwin van der Sar, full marks to him for making a couple of really decent saves, especially in a game when he's been a spectator, really, hasn't he, for large periods.
Yeah, I thought he, obviously the one in the top corner, I can't remember who he struck it now, but it was Danny Pugh, wasn't it? Yeah, Danny Pugh. No, I think that was heading straight for the top corner. It was a great save, and the one that came off Rio Ferdinand as well, which was going in the far corner, you know, to get a fingertip on that to nudge it around the post was fantastic. And like you say, didn't have anything to do, you know, during the game really, and he pulled off some fantastic saves. And I think that he'll be our number one next season, unless we bring in somebody, you know, somebody like Hugo Lloris or someone like that. But I imagine Van der Sar will be number one. And I think he's fully deserving of it. I thought he had a good game.
It doesn't look like Ben Foster's going to be challenging him.
Well, it depends.
To be believed.
Yeah, if it depends if you know you believe the reports. But no, I mean, if we do get 6 million for him, I think that's a decent price for a keeper that's not really played much. And 6 million, yeah, I would probably take it, but I still think he's a top goalkeeper, and I hope that I'm proven right. And if he does go to Birmingham, I mean, it'd be a decent club for him to go to, wouldn't it? We've seen what Joe Hart's done there this season, so it'd be a good little club for him to move to and boost his England prospects by playing week in, week out, if he does leave United.
Do you think he can actually boost his England prospects? I mean, do you think he's good enough to get an England squad?
Yeah, of course he is. I mean, if he's playing, like, you know, week in, week out, like Joe Hart has this season, he's not having missed a game, has he? And I think that then he can finally put a string of games together where he can show everyone what he can do, because I think that's all he's missing, you know.
He's 7 years old, and he's played, I think, in his whole career now, just over 100 games for a 27-year-old. That's ridiculous.
But, what do you mean it's ridiculous? You know, some players develop late. You know, Ian Wright was, how old is he, like 23, 24, when he got going, you know. Come on, I think that there's a lot of potential in him. Goalkeepers can last, as we've seen with Van der Sar, they can last till they're 36, 37, you know, maybe up to 40. You know, I think that the fact that he's not played a huge amount of games could be a good point for him to say, well, I might as well make the best out of the next sort of 8 to 10 years.
I don't know. I think you're clutching at straws.
I rate Ben Foster. You don't. It's not an issue. You think Thomas Kuzak's better than Foster, which I completely disagree on. You know, football's all about opinions. I'd rather see Foster stay than Kuzak.
Oh dear, we'll move it on swiftly there. I'm going to go back to Dan for this question, Dolph, because England matters I don't think will be of great interest to you.
I love talking about England, Steve. What are you talking about?
All right, then, I'll ask you then. With the England squad, the provisional 30-man squad to be named by Fabio Capello on Tuesday, I mean, I know we're a United podcast, but realistically, I mean, how many of the United players do you expect to be making that cut?
I think Wayne Rooney will be there. I think Rio Ferdinand will be there.
Put your neck on the line, Dolph, there with Wayne Rooney.
Exactly. I am putting my neck on the line. I think I think Wes Brown and Gary Neville will be there. Because I can't see who's much better than a right back. Glenn Johnson, maybe, but that's pretty much it, I think. Michael Carrick, Owen Hargreaves. I think Carrick might get in because of Gareth Barry's injury, but I don't think Hargreaves will get in, even though he's been mooted to. I read somewhere today that apparently he's on the shortlist of shortlists for the squad as well. I don't know, maybe Danny Welbeck should get a wee game. I don't know, what do you think?
No, I'm not so sure about that, but Dan, would you go along with that? I mean, yeah. Most of them seem pretty spot on, and Hargreaves looks unlikely, but I'd argue that you're not going to see Gary Neville and Wes Brown in that squad, but might be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, they're the names that I got listed down here on this little scrap piece of paper. I've got, you know, Neville, like Dolph said, I've got Wes Brown. I don't know if Wes Brown would go or not, because, I mean, if Carragher's meant to be going, then I don't think Wes Brown will go, which I think is a real shame, as I touched on before, you know. Wes Brown's played in some of the qualifiers, he's played in the friendlies leading up to it. And I think it'd be harsh if someone like Wes Brown got omitted for Jamie Carragher, who's not played for, is it 3 years now for England? And he ruled himself out. I think that'd be a disgrace if that happened. Rio, obviously, I think he'll be fine to play in the World Cup. He's a bit like Ledley King in a way. But I'd definitely take Rio. He's got to take him, he's England captain, isn't he? So he's not going to not take him. Rooney, obviously. Hargreaves, possibly, but I doubt. But yeah, I think Carrick's a big question mark.
I think Barry's injury is probably.
I think Barry will recover in time to play, and I don't think. I get the impression that Capello doesn't really like Michael Carrick in a two-man midfield. So I don't know.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, we'll move on to the email section now. Then James McAllister sent one in about Ben Foster, just sort of backing up the argument that he feels he's not sort of mentally the right choice to be a future United number one. We've already discussed Foster at some length earlier on and last week, of course. So move on to Eddie Gillatt's question about possible transfer targets for the summer and where we might strengthen. And a bit of a hypothetical question, guys. If you were in Sir Alex Ferguson's shoes and say you had 3 signings you could make and 3 players you could sell, I mean, who would you be looking to bring in and get rid of? Safi and Ben Zaire's emailed in, and he's mentioned 3 that he'd be happy to see leave. It'd be Berbatov, Ben Foster and Michael Carrick. And in terms of players in, he suggested Benzema of Real Madrid, who Dan's mentioned before, wouldn't be too keen on, considering he's already turned us down in the past. And also Carlos Tevez, he'd re-sign him. I think that's slightly tongue-in-cheek. But yeah, I mean, what would be your thoughts on who would be in and out?
I had a wee think about my list. I would sell Ben Foster. I was thinking about Michael Carrick, but I decided against it. And actually, I would get rid of Ji-Sung Park, my favourite player, Dimitar Berbatov. I think I'm going to use my analogy. Dimitar Berbatov is like wireless. Sometimes it's great and it works well. Other times you can't get a connection and it just suddenly goes down and it just doesn't work. So I think those would be the three I would get rid of. Park, I don't think he's a football player, if I'm being honest.
You what?
I think technically he's absolutely terrible, and I think that we can get much more quality players that could do a better job than him. So I would, and he's getting on a bit as well. I think he's 29, 30 years old, so get a bit of money for him. And obviously Ben Foster, like we said before. I'll leave who I'm going to bring in first. Like Dan, who would you get rid of, and do you agree or disagree? Because I can sense that you disagree.
No, I can definitely see where you're coming from with the Parks thing, you know, with his age and players can do better. But I think that I'd keep him because he's very versatile. He's obviously a hard worker and he seems to love to play for Man United. But I disagree on the Foster. I'd go with Kužak, get rid of Kužak, maybe get about 5 million for Thomas Kužak there. I wouldn't want to sell Michael Carrick, but if a bid of say 10-15 million came in from someone like, you know, Spurs or Aston Villa, somebody, you know, of that ilk, I think that Ferguson would obviously listen to it, and providing that we could get a decent replacement in as well. And another one I'd let Welbeck go. I don't think he's good enough for United, and I think Makeda showed a lot more ability when he's played.
In terms of players in, Eddie Gillat offers a few suggestions. Simon Kjær, who I believe is from Palermo. David Silva, of course, at Valencia, who's recently said that he'd seemingly jump at the chance to join United. So I think that could be a real possibility if Ferguson's willing to come up with 30-odd million that's likely to be needed. Stephen Ireland's another one he mentions. He's been long linked with a move to us from City. And the final one, he says, is David Villa, of course, the Valencia and Spain international striker. So there's a few options. Dan, do you go along with any of them?
I definitely agree with David Silva. I think that he's a cracking player. He can play left or right. Dov, like you're saying, Park. If you've got someone like Silva in to replace Park, then obviously it's a no-brainer. Obviously, Silva can play just behind the front two as well, so I think he's a very good player. And the thing is, though, when you buy new players, I mean, we're going to have to wait until probably after the World Cup to do our business, unless we act pretty swiftly, you know. And a lot of prices will go up depending on how well they do at the World Cup, so it could be a tricky situation with us being priced out, especially if somebody like City wanted the same players. But I would look to bring in Hugo Lloris from Lyon. I think he's a good keeper. Obviously it depends on the price. They'll probably want about 20 million for him, wouldn't they? Something like that. It's been muted as well about Gonzalo Higuain from Real Madrid. Don't know if he's probably United class, but he scores goals, doesn't he? And it's something that we probably need to help Rooney with. So I think there's a few options out there.
I'd say Higuain's a lot like Tevez, if I'm perfectly honest. I think he's got the sort of work rate and desire for Tevez. So I don't think he would be much of an upgrade from what Tevez was, but I would sign him if he was available and he wasn't sort of like, they weren't asking for 40 odd million or anything stupid like that. But he is Real Madrid's top scorer, is he, this season? It must be pretty close between him and Ronaldo, but he's definitely up there. So he's had a good season, and yeah, I'd probably go for him if he was available. But Dov, I mean, it's an interesting point there that Dan made about the World Cup. I mean, could possibly our activity be sort of triggered by, say, there's a standout player at the World Cup who scores a few goals and isn't really too well known at the moment? Could that prompt us to sort of come in big club and tempt them away? Or do you think Ferguson's already got in his mind who he's lining up and who he's likely to bid for?
I think he'll have his targets already in mind, and who he thinks the squad could be improved and who's going to get in, because I don't think there's many players really at the World Cup that we don't know about. I mean, obviously, we've got a scouting network that's worldwide, so any players that are of notable ability, they've already seen them and looked at them. So I don't think there's that you get that many World Cups these days who come in and you don't hear anything, like you don't know anything about. So I think he'll have his targets in mind, and he'll try and get business done. I think he will try and get business done before the World Cup. One frame for what Dan was saying about prices and things like that, because if you do get one of the targets having a great World Cup, then prices skyrocket. And that's pretty much that's what will happen. So I think he'll look to try and get as much business done as possible before the World Cup.
Did you think he'll sort of he'll look to bring people in before the World Cup and then maybe keep a bit of a sort of cash reserve back just in case anybody sprouts out, you know, and has a decent World Cup? Like you say, I mean, they probably know about him anyway, but a World Cup's the best stage to prove your ability, I suppose. And if there's any doubt in the scouts' minds, then obviously the World Cup would be a great place to.
Doesn't give him much time though, does it?
No.
Teams are meeting potentially within the next few weeks to sort of start training camps and the like. It doesn't give you much time to discuss contracts and transfer fees and all things like that.
Well, it'd be the agents really that'd be doing that, wouldn't it? If you went in for someone like David Silva, for example, I mean, he'll be with Spain, like you say, in a few weeks. And he'll tell his agent how much he thinks he should be getting, and he'll go into discussions, won't he? I think it'd work out like that, really. It'd be fantastic if we could buy a big name player. I think we just need a little boost, you know, someone to come in just to, you know, freshen it up a little bit. Because like Ferguson said, I mean, we've been challenging for the title for 4 years now with, you know, roughly the same sort of, you know, collection of players, and it must become a bit stagnant in, you know, within the camp with one or two of them.
Come on then, Dolph, who'd be your three primary targets?
We mentioned a couple of them already. We mentioned David Silva for the reasons Dan said before. Yeah, I would bring in Benzema. Even though he did go to Real Madrid last year, I would still bring him in because I think he's a top quality player, and he's the type of player I think would work well with the way we want to play. I think he would sit off the shoulder as well. He's a strong lad, he's quick, he's intelligent, and he's reasonably young as well. So I mean, him and Rooney could form a quite devastating partnership. And the third player I'd bring in would be Marek Hamšík of Napoli. So I think he's a young player. He's kind of in the mold of like a Frank Lampard type. He's a break from midfield, he scores goals, he's got a great finisher, he's got immense work rate, and I just think it's something that maybe we lack a little bit. I think you've mentioned before many times, Steve, that we need some sort of creativity from midfield, and he can certainly provide that. So he would be the third that I would bring in. And obviously he's at Napoli, so he's not one of the biggest teams in the world, so he's certainly somebody that's a realistic target as well.
The thing about Benzema as well, I mean, if he does sort of if he was to come to United, he'd obviously have something to prove to Real Madrid, wouldn't he? If he came and it was, you know, deemed as a failure over there after, is it only one season he's been there?
One season,
yeah. I mean, it would be a good capture for us, but I think that I'd rather have somebody who really wants to play for United, if you know what I mean, not somebody who's only coming to United because they've not made it at Real Madrid, if you know what I'm saying. At least if Higuain came in, at least he can say, yeah, I've done the business for a few seasons now at Madrid. I think it'd be a different story.
Well, if you, the listeners, want to get involved and put forward some suggestions, free players you'd bring in and potentially free players you'd get rid of, feel free to email us, podcast@redcafe.net, and we'll strive to read them all out in what looks like it's going to be our end of season.
You're listening
show next
to the
week.
Redcafe.net podcast.
Well, on the final reserves review, well, it's not reserves review, it's under 18s as the reserves have finished their complement of fixtures. Dov's going to look at two decisive games for the youth team.
Yeah, indeed, Steve. The season's over for the reserves and the full squad, and the under 18s have also finished their season. But I mentioned in the last reserves review that they had a very important game against Everton, which they needed to win the Academy Premier League Group C title. It was away, and they managed to win it. They won 2-0. Paul McGinnis's side, obviously, they needed just a point from the game. Everton actually needed to beat United and City in the remaining two games. But it was Will Keane, Ravel Morrison, etc., who came out on top. Keane put United in front after 26 minutes. Some good footwork inside their area before a typically cool finish from the youngster. It was under pressure from some Everton defenders. Then 89th minute, Ravel Morrison made sure of the win with a neat finish to wrap up all 3 points. And this meant that that we secured a place in the playoffs for between the teams and the three other regional division winners. And the game that we played was a game against Arsenal, which they won their group and we won ours. So we played them on Friday, and it was, well, it wasn't the best, shall we say. It was heartbreak for the under-18s because it was a 1-1 draw, but Arsenal won 5-3 on penalties. We should have taken, we did it 5 minutes extra time. Keane, he miscued his shot after good work from a Jose in the penalty area. But shortly afterwards, substitute. You ready for this? Ozgan, was that? Ozyakup. There you go. Try say that when you've had one or two. He was on the pitch for 1 minute. Fired home a loose ball from a high cross, caused a bit of confusion in the United defence, and well, what can we say, it went in. So it was 1-0 to Arsenal, although as typically United, we never gave up. And Keane was replaced by John Coffey, whose impact was instant, as his counterpart, an Arsenal team whose name I'm not going to say again, he was sent over by a Ravel Morrison pass sent over the top of the defence. He raced clear, held up his marker, and finished coolly off the inside of post. So there you have it. It's 1-1. So we went into the penalty shootout. It was 5-3. And obviously we didn't get to go to the final of the Academy League. So to play for the Academy League trophy. Outright winners. So yeah, not bad, I would say. Some good performances from the under-18s. Obviously winning the respective division. Blown up a great game against Arsenal, so I think they can be proud of their achievements. Obviously, take that with what the reserves achieved as well. They won the reserve league, so I think it's been for the youngsters. It's just definitely been a successful season, and hopefully, we shall see more of the same next year.
Excellent stuff. Right, well, we'll move on to look at our player and cabbage of the week, and also the respective awards for the season too. Considering it's the end of the Premier League campaign now. Dov, I'll start with you just for the week at first. Who would be your player of the week?
I think, Steve, I'm going to give it to Nani again. Nani seems to get player of the week every week for me. It's fantastic. Every time he went forward, it looked like the Stokes back, like they didn't really know what they were going to do with him. And also set up Berbatov a number of times, but Big Bulgarian couldn't finish them. So he's my player of the week this week.
Dan?
I think Ryan Giggs had a decent game against Stoke. I think he played really well, obviously scored as well, and he set up a few chances and got a few moves going, so I think, yeah, Ryan Giggs.
I'm going to join Dov and go with Nani. I thought he was looking really bright, and yeah, Stoke really, really did struggle to deal with him and put a number of really decent crosses in, and yeah, just a really positive performance again from him, so Nani for me. What about Cabbage then, Dan?
I don't think anyone had a bad game. Obviously, Berbatov missed a few chances. I thought Scholes was fairly quiet. So yeah, I think I'll give it to Paul Scholes, actually. Just because he wasn't his usual brilliant self.
Fair enough. Dov?
I think this is, as per usual, Dimitar Berbatov wasted a number of chances. Had
in
one,
number,
even. One good moment at what? What did you say, Dan?
No, it doesn't matter.
Number of chances wasted. I one good run to set up Giggs' goal, and that was pretty much it for me. One good thing in the match, so he's getting cabbage again from me.
Like you said, there's not many choices. I'm going to rather harshly give it to Wayne Rooney, which is really harsh because he did a bit of brilliance to set up the own goal, didn't he? But I think the injury didn't help, but he didn't look like he was quite on his game as he usually is. And I think he was being affected by what was going on at the Chelsea game as well. Most of the players seemed to not really look like they were being affected by it. But if I had to pick out one that sort of seemed to accept that we weren't going to win the title and it seemed to affect his performance, I'd say Rooney. And the golden boot thing as well. I'm not sure if he knew about how well Drogba was doing in scoring the hat-trick, but maybe that news of that had filled through to him as well. So all in all, that will contribute to him not really having a great game. So Rooney for me. Well then, we'll look at our awards for the season then. Dov, I'll start with you. Who would be your standout player of the season?
It's quite tough. I think there's been a number. I think you're going to look at obviously Wayne Rooney, because if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be anywhere near sort of who we were challenging for the league or getting so far as we did in Europe either. I think you've got to look again, Patrice Evra, a great season, Vidic, and I'll say maybe Valencia for the full season, and Nani especially for the second half. Well,
tell you what, Dov, just name all the squad. I thought Giggs has been good second half of the, well, first half of the season. Scholes second half of the season.
Anderson's definitely
Van der Sar when he's played, I don't know. Anderson, he played one good half against. I don't know, Dov. I mean, who are you going to like put a name on it or what?
I think my player for the whole season, I'm going to give it to Patrice Evra. Not to, because I know one of you two will give it to Wayne Rooney, so I'm going to give it to Patrice Evra, because I think he's played in every single league game for us this season as well, and he's been of a consistent. His performances have been consistently good, and you can't ask much more from him. Great defensively, excellent going forward. He really does own the left hand side of the park. So he for me has probably been our best player of the season.
A choice, Dan.
I think. Right, okay. I reckon I would have also gone for Evra, but Dov, you've already done it anyway. I think I'm going to go with Paul Scholes. I think that at his age, I think he's still been a player that throughout the season he's played fairly well, and towards the end of the season he's been fantastic for us, keeping the likes of Carrick out of the team, and Gibson who's come through like you said. So I think that Paul Scholes, I think that he's been. Been pretty decent all year. He's been consistent when he's played. I mean, he had that bad game against Fulham where he gifted a goal away. The odd occasion where he's had a bit of lapse of concentration, but I think overall, I think he's been very good for us this season, and surprisingly good.
You surprised me, to be honest, Dan, with that choice, I have to say.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Obviously, Wayne Rooney's been phenomenal. I'm not doubting that. I'm not saying Paul Scholes has been better than Wayne Rooney. I just think that. I think Scholes has been pretty decent.
That's a fair shout, and you probably assume that I'm going to pick Rooney, and you haven't really given me much choice there. it's got to be Rooney. I mean, is it 34 goals he tallied this season? I know it was 26 in the league. So, like Dov said, without Rooney, God knows where would have been this season. Might not have even been in the Champions League spots. In all fairness, he's been absolutely superb.
Steve, I'll help you out then. If it wasn't Wayne Rooney, if you could pick somebody else, you can have free reign.
It's like we've got an opposition fan on. if I couldn't have Rooney, it'd have to be Darren Fletcher, to be honest. I think he's stepped up a level. Last season he was terrific, but you're talking about a player who's first on the team sheet at the moment, Rooney aside, I'd have to say Fletcher would be the man for me, because he's just so influential now. He seems to cover every blade of grass with every game that he plays. And he's grown in confidence, he's grown in stature. And if Darren Fletcher was English, he'd be the first name on the England team as well. I think he's been absolutely superb. So, yeah, Rooney aside, it would be Fletcher. But what about the big one, the cabbage of the year then? I'm pretty certain I know where Dov's going with this one. So, Dan... quite intrigued to know who you're going to pick out actually for your cabbage of the year.
I think that out of the big name players, I think obviously it's not been helped by his injuries, but I think Rio Ferdinand, he's hardly played this season, and I don't think that you can say he's had the best influence. I mean, he's played well when he's been able to play, but I think his injuries are one of the main reasons why we've not lifted the Premier League this season. I think if him or Vidic should have been in the back four for all the season, I think we'd have been fine. But I think that Rio is such a big player for us, and I think it shows when we don't play him. I think that the way he reads the game, his passing ability from the back can't be underestimated either. He's good in the air. He's still got a bit of pace, and everything else in his it's communication skills as well at the back. I mean, when you go to Old Trafford, I sit near enough to the pitch where you can hear him, shouting the back in orders, and Ferdinand does it. He does it all game, and I think that's what we've missed, a bit of leadership. You know, because Gary Neville, when he's played, I mean, he's a leader of a type, but I don't think he's the same leader as what Ferdinand is. And Giggs is, you know, fairly, he's more inspirational than sort of an aggressive captain, isn't he? So I think Ferdinand, but, you know, only due to his injuries and the fact that he's not been able to stay fit.
It's a fair shout. I mean, the obvious choice is of course, Berbatov, but I think I'm going to give it to Michael Carrick, which is a tad harsh because at the start of the season, he didn't do a lot wrong, but I think that is the thing with Michael Carrick. He doesn't do a lot wrong, but he doesn't seem to influence games massively. And if you listen back to any podcast we sort of did last year, I mean, I'd always sort of criticise Carrick and sort of say, what does he bring to us? And my opinion changed towards the end of last season because he did sort of start to score some goals and really sort of change games with his performances. But again, this season, if I had to pick out a game that Michael Carrick was absolutely outstanding, I mean, something, it doesn't really jump out at you, does it? I mean, I think the Arsenal game, he was probably his best game this season, where he sort of really got hold of the midfield and dictated the play, but it's just not happened enough for me, which is probably a bit harsh, but that's my honest opinion.
I mean, the thing with Michael Carrick, like you say, he's not a standout player. He's never going to be one of them players that's just going to, like you say, you know, just stand out in midfield. He'll do his job, he'll do it well. He won't be outstanding, he'll do the simple stuff well, he'll try the ambitious stuff as well. And I think that he has had a poor season by his standards, but I mean, you know, out of 4 years, he's won the league 3 years and he's been an instrumental part in us doing that. And I think that, I don't think he'll leave in the summer. Well, I certainly hope he doesn't anyway, and I hope that he can recapture that form, because on his day, he's the best passer at the club apart from Paul Scholes.
If we bought in, though, like a David Silva, if you play Silva just off the striker or you bring in an attacking midfielder, I really don't see where Carrick fits in next season.
Well, it all depends on Hargreaves, I think, Steve, because, I mean, if Hargreaves can prove his fitness, then Hargreaves will play most of the games, won't he? With, you know, him and Fletcher, possibly. Then you've got Anderson to come into reckoning as well. But, I mean, I've always liked Carrick much better in a you know, five-man midfield. You know, where he can sit and orchestrate the play. And I think Carrick, Fletcher, and David Silva in the same team would be pretty decent, because Silva, to have an impact, you need somebody to give him the ball. And I think Carrick's a perfect example of someone who can do that, really.
It's fair enough. And like I say, I don't mean to say he's a bad player or anything like that, because he isn't. He's great on the ball and he can certainly pick a pass. But I just think if there was one sort of, we've mentioned it in the past, if there was a player that I thought was an expendable commodity that could be got rid of, I'd say it was probably Carrick. What about Dov then? Come on, who's your cabbage of the season?
Dimitar Berbatov has to be. Not too many wasted chances, not enough influence in the team when he should be having a bigger influence on the team. Doesn't start against the big teams. The flashes he shows are too infrequent for my liking. And it's been another poor season, and then my opinion for Dimitar. So, we've spoken about it at length throughout the season, and it doesn't impress me whatsoever. So, I would say au revoir to Dimitar.
Probably one of the most foregone conclusions in history, to be honest. But if you, the listeners, do want to get involved and offer up your suggestions for Cabbage and Player of the Year, you know the email address, it's podcast@redcafe.net, and we welcome all your entries, so do get in touch with us. Well, we'll move it swiftly on to Dov's legends profile then, and it really is an absolute legend this week, Dov.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd make it a bit special, because this is going to be the last legend of the season, so we're going to have the legend of legends. It is Sir Bobby Charlton. He was born on the 11th of October, 1937, in Ashington in Northumberland. Where we're going to start? He's been such a massive figure in the history of United for over 50 years. Some would say he's probably the greatest player ever to play for United. He had a career which took in 17 years of top flight football, 12 years with the England national team. He even got his stats for United. He made 604 league appearances, scored 198 goals. And both were club records, and so Ryan Giggs passed Charlton's leading club appearance record of 758 in May 2008. He scored 20 goals in 78 FA Cup ties and had a 1-2 scoring record in European competition, 22 goals in 45 games. So it's not bad for a midfielder. In addition to this, he won a numerous amount of honours, like three league championships, the FA Cup in 1963, European Cup in 68, and as well as some tournament England won in 1966, although I do forget what it is. He scored twice in the semi-final in the 66 World Cup against Portugal, and he played 106 times for England, and it was the most England caps ever achieved by a Manchester United player until David Beckham surpassed it. And he's England's top scorer with a tally of 49 goals. So again, he's a midfield player. He got 40, he's the top scorer for his country. It's fantastic. On top of that, he's an OBE. He got that in 1969. A CBE in 1974, and was awarded a knighthood in 1994. And after his success with United and England, he was voted the English Player of the Year and the European Footballer of the Year in 1966. I've just reeled off a number of honours, but it's also, you've also got to remember the way he conducts himself. He's got a lot of dignity about him, and I don't know many people that have got a bad word to say about him. Obviously, he now takes up a role as a director at the club and as an ambassador, obviously, abroad for us and England as well. So just 2 months before the Munich air disaster, he became a first-team regular, and he scored 12 goals in 15 appearances prior to that tragedy. After Bobby Charlton spent 8 days in hospital, he returned home to recover and returned to playing football just 24 days after the crash, which is astounding. And this was in a six-round FA Cup match against West Bromwich Albion. That was on the 1st of March 1958. That was a 2-2 draw. Following the disaster, Charlton played a further 16 games that same season, scoring 6 times, which I think is absolutely unbelievable that a guy could do that after obviously such a tragedy. After the tragedy, Charlton was used as a focal point for Matt Busby to rebuild the United side. The following campaign was his best ever in terms of goal scoring. He scored 5 goals in the opening 2 games of the 58-59 season. He got 3 against Chelsea, 2 against Nottingham Forest. And he went on to finish the season with 29 league goals. And he had a fantastic partnership with VLA. Despite his exploits for United, it wasn't until 1963 that he won his second piece of silverware when we won the FA Cup in a 3-1 victory over Leicester City. 2 seasons later, in 64-65, Charlton scored 10 goals in 41 league games, helped United win the championship for the first time in 8 years, and we again repeated defeat in 1967. And he was playing every game in that season as well. And obviously this success led United to the European Cup, which we went all the way to the final. Charlton was ever-present in that run as well, as we brushed aside Hibernian in the first round, FK Sarajevo, Real Madrid in the semis, and then obviously the 29th of May 1968, Charlton led United out against Benfica, which had a team that contained Eusebio, Coluna, and this was only 10 years after the Munich air disaster as well. And this was this was the trophy that Sir Matt Busby wanted and the team craved. A year later, we reached the semi-finals only to be knocked out by AC Milan. And it's like the end of an era. Charlton at this time really wasn't speaking to George Best, and again Dennis Law didn't really have the best of relationships by then. In that season, we were 11th in the league and lost 15 games that season as well. Next 3 seasons after, we finished trophyless, 8th position in the league. Charlton knew that his career was coming to a bit of an end. He said he was 35 years old and he'd done everything he could do in the game. In 1973, after another lackluster season, United finished in 18th place, and a year later we were relegated. He then left United to become player manager of Preston North End, and he had 10 times in 45 matches, although they were relegated, and he left the club. In 1975, he played a season in Ireland for Waterford United, where he scored 18 goals in 31 games for them. I think a 22-year playing career, scored 326 goals in 940 appearances for club and country before he decided to hang up his boots. So it's a phenomenal amount of games and a great goal scoring record. His England career, like we mentioned, scored 49 goals, 4 hat-tricks as well. And on the 22nd of May 1968, he scored his 45th international goal, and that was when he broke Jimmy Greaves' England goal scoring record as well. Obviously, we've mentioned the World Cup. That's probably one of the defining moments of his career. And he's always going to be... when people think of Bobby Charlton, they think of the rocket shots, the sweeping passes, the attitude, the energy, and the way he conducted himself, like I mentioned. And also, he did have quite a distinctive hairstyle as well. I think it's a side sweep. So, I could talk for hours and hours about him because he is such a legend. But I mean, he still plays a part of the club just now. He was a fantastic player. He's a great man, and really, there's nothing else really that I could say about him. Like, there's no more superlatives. He is the legend of legends at Old Trafford.
He does wear them silly hats though when he attends matches at Old Trafford.
That's the best negative that can come out, really, isn't it?
Yeah, nah, it's quality player. Well, he was a quality player. Obviously, I never saw him play, but you obviously hear things.
Well, that's just about the end of episode 40, the RedCafe.net podcast. Make sure you join us next week, where we'll be doing a month-by-month season review.
I reckon we should risk it, but like, try and put commentary clips in there and stuff like that.
We could
do it like Premiership years, where we have music from the time. We've gone through the fun part.
Music from the month.
Yeah, for the 1-0 defeat at the hands of Burnley. We've got some Lady Gaga in the background.